In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
The 2016 election sent a clear message by Republicans to their elected leaders. Republicans were done with rhinos, done with Democrat-like candidates, and done with Republican establishment. They wanted the new direction. Sadly, one of the most important outcomes of the 2022 midterms was a missed opportunity for Democrats to send a similar message to their elected officials. Enough with the crime-riddled cities. Enough with the lockdowns. Enough with the embrace of globalism and Marxism. If there had been an absolute blowout red tsunami, imagine the soul-searching that would be happening right now in every Democrat strategist's boardroom. Instead, right now, Democrat politicians are thinking, gosh, in the middle of a terrible economy, in spite of massive inflation and a recession, despite all the negatives, they still voted for us. That was the message from Democrats to their leaders. You can do anything you want to us and we'll still vote for you, just as long as you're not a Republican. And that's not on Republicans, that's on Democrats who didn't vote against Democrats. But what was perhaps the most shocking turn of the 2022 election wasn't the Democrats. It was the establishment Republicans who immediately used the excuse of the winds weren't big enough to attack their own party and blame Trump. Which is, of course, a huge logical fallacy, unless you have a time machine to go back and run rhino and moderate candidates to prove that you would have won. This isn't how reality works, but it is how someone who knows better persuades people who don't know better. I'm sure you do. On today's show, we'll do some post-election analysis and look at some paths ahead with Mark Thielman. That will be in the second half of today's show, but first we're going to talk with Kim Herman, the General Counsel for the Southeastern Legal Foundation, about the ever-so-strange case of Eric Greitens, the former Missouri governor who was forced out of office using what I believe was the same blueprint, the same template, to go after Trump and all Republicans. I'd like to welcome Kimberly Herman back to the show. We last talked with her back in April about the strange case of the prosecutorial misconduct by Kim Gardner in Missouri as she used falsified evidence to effectively remove the duly elected governor, falsified because it simply didn't exist. Kimberly, it is great to talk to you.
Great to be back with you.
Yeah, absolutely. So we want to have you back on to talk about a big update in your case to pry open some records from Kim Gardner. Just to remind people of what happened, let me go through this. Kim Gardner was a George Soros attorney general, and she cooked up some evidence to go after Eric Greitens, a former SEAL who had been elected as the governor of Missouri in 2016. And after getting elected, Greitens actually started keeping his campaign promises, including cutting a state-funded low-income housing project that a lot of people were making some pretty good money off of. But George Soros Democrats like Gardner don't believe in letting pesky things like elections or actual democracy get in their way. So to undo the election, she alleged that Greitens was trying to blackmail the woman that he had an affair with before he got elected. Gardner accused him of having a nude photo of this woman. She was a hairdresser and would make it public if she didn't keep quiet about the affair. So Gardner opened a case against the governor, and her prosecution eventually led to his stepping down. Except, just like the Russia collusion, she had made it all up, and she eventually dropped the case because she never had the photo she claimed that he had used to attempt to blackmail her. So did I miss anything in that recap?
No, you hit the nail on the head right there. That's exactly where we were when our client, John Solomon, stepped in and filed some open records requests to figure out, you know, who's talking to who behind the scenes here and what kind of influence or undue influence may have been put on Kim Gardner for her to actually bring these charges without any evidence.
And that was in 2019 when you guys got involved on John's behalf. What made him suspicious to begin with? I mean, aside from the obvious fraud.
Yeah, I mean, aside from the obvious fraud, you know, John himself would have to answer those questions. But, you know, what we did know at the time is that there were some payments that were being made in Missouri. So there were some $50,000 payments being made that were... they were really suspect, right? So the man who was making the payments said, you know, hey, I'm giving this money to Eric Greitens' mistress's husband's lawyer, right? Try to follow that. But basically, when you think about that, right, I'm giving the money to them for a story, for the backstory about this person's life. And that just didn't really pass the smell test. When you have lobbyists giving money to others for things that just appear made up. And so the question really became, why was this money exchanged? How much was exchanged? Who was talking to who? And again, what influence do these Soros-funded entities have to really weaponize Kim Gardner's office against a sitting governor?
Yeah, and those payments were really, as you say, just odd and suspicious, just on the surface level. It was a payment from, from Scott Faughn. He was the publisher of the Missouri Times. And in early January 2018, made a $50,000 payment. And then the next day, that lawyer, Watkins, the lawyer for the ex-husband of the hairdresser who allegedly Greitens had the picture of, there was that $50,000 initially from Scott Faughn. And then there was another $50,000 payment from somebody who went by the name of Skylar. And so it's $100,000 in total from an unnamed, anonymous, wealthy source there. That's just so crazily suspicious. Did you ever find out who this Skylar person was?
We have not found out who this Skylar person is, right? All of the emails that we obtained through this records, open records request, which we had to fight for 3 years to get these records, right? As you mentioned, you know, the original request was filed in 2019. And when Kim Gardner's office refused to even respond and give over the documents, we had to file a lawsuit. They refused to respond to the lawsuit. Which is unheard of, right? You have a local district attorney, prosecuting attorney, refusing to even file an answer in response to a lawsuit. So the court said, you guys defaulted. They get their documents. We had to work it all the way up to the courts of appeal in Missouri. I mean, yeah, because they kept on, you know, fighting it. Mm-hmm. We ultimately got these records that are out there, and nowhere in it does it identify who the Skylar is. But, you know, these payments were no secret. They were identified in a Missouri legislature report, and they really were just a mystery as to who was giving them to who and where the money was ultimately coming from. And so there are still some questions in the saga, but what the documents show is who was talking to who and confirming that meetings were happening and that money was exchanging hands. And it's really just unbelievable to me that, you know, you can have this kind of influence to undo elections, as you mentioned, and nobody gets in trouble for it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Kim Gardner's office, they get a slap on the hand. That's all they get.
Yep.
I mean, we've got to bring some honesty back to rule of law.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Okay. Let's go and take a break there. Kimberly Hermelin is our guest. Today she is with the Southeastern Legal Foundation. They had a victory in that Kim Gardner wrongful prosecution case, and we're going to talk more about that next. Stay with us. Kimberly Herman is the general counsel for Southeastern Legal Foundation. They fight for your rights and defend the Constitution. They are also the attorney for John Solomon's Just the News organization. And back in April, they had a victory against Kim Gardner, the Missouri prosecutor, or I should say the George Soros prosecutor, to get public records from her. And finally, after years of court battles, they finally got them. So Kim, why did this take so long? The judge had said, yes, you have to turn them over back in April when you guys had won the case. And now here we are like 6 months later. Even the post office is faster than that. Why did it take so long?
It took so long because Kim Gardner's office just refused to respond. So when you file a lawsuit, any lawsuit, right, you file a complaint and the defendants have to file an answer. Well, in this case, Kim Gardner's office and an attorney's office refused to file an answer. And so the court issued what's called a default judgment and said they haven't responded. And so you guys win and you get the records. Well, Kim Gardner's office didn't like that. And so they fought for 3 years. We had to take the case up the appellate chain. I mean, it was absolutely unbelievable. We litigate open records requests all the time. We have some that have lasted 7 years. We have never seen anything like this, though, where they just flat out refused to respond. And so ultimately, we got the records. And Kim Gardner's office had to pay a civil penalty for all of their obstruction and for their refusal to give over records that are the public document, mm-hmm. right? People forget these are public records. They belong to us, the public,
right?
Not to Kim Gardner.
Well, but why the delay even between April and I think you got them in late October? Why 6 months to hand them over once that she'd been ordered that, yes, you in fact have to turn these over?
Yeah, so she continued to refuse to turn them over. It was really unbelievable. We had to go back to court again and ask the judge to enforce the judgment that had already been put into place. After 3 years, they were tried to relitigate the case, and the judge just, you know, the judge followed rule of law. He followed the statute, which says these are public records. Not only should you have turned them over in the first place, but I ordered you to turn them over. Now turn them over. And so her office had to pay a $5,000 penalty, and we got awarded attorney's fees in this case also. So unfortunately, it cost the taxpayers, right? That's not coming out of her pocket.
Right.
That's money that she cost the taxpayers because she refused to give over documents that showed that there were payments made to weaponize her office. It's, I mean, the people of St. Louis should be furious about this.
You would think so. But I know that she won re-election after all of this, which just baffles my mind that somebody can be this, you know, they can flaunt the law when they're supposed to be upholding it, and yet she gets re-elected. It's just insane. So you guys had 393 pages turned over containing emails and other communication between Kim Gardner and outside people who were helping her effectively set up the sham prosecution. So what have you guys learned now that you've had access to those or confirmed from those documents?
Yeah, I mean, those documents confirm what so many of us already believed from these legislative reports that were out there. And it really confirmed that the payments were exchanged. It showed the actual communications between the two. Specifically, there was an email in 2018, just 4 days before Eric Greitens was indicted, in which there were concerns raised by Eric Greitens' former mistress that these photos didn't exist, right? And so what they really show is that Kim Gardner knew when she brought these charges against Greitens that she did not have the evidence to support these charges. That's
so
what they show.
Was there anything in particular that maybe really shocked you guys?
I mean, after watching Kim Gardner and how she prosecutes cases and knowing that these ethics charges have been brought against her and have been founded to be true, I personally was certainly not surprised, but sometimes when you see it in black and white and it confirms your suspicions, it really can be shocking, and it's disappointing, right? It's disappointing because we have had an FBI, a DOJ, local prosecutors, they're all going rogue, and they're just using their offices as political weapons.
Yes.
And it's disheartening.
It absolutely is. And it ought to be disheartening to both sides of the aisle, not just one, because eventually the power that is abused against your opponent can eventually be used and abused against you. So I know that one of the outside external forces that you'd been looking for communications from was George Soros himself. Did anything show up there?
So not from George Soros himself, but there were groups involved that are funded by George Soros. So there were PACs involved, and some of the people involved in the communications are very active in these PACs that we do know are funded by George Soros. And those PACs funded Gardner's campaign. So when you follow the trail of money, and John Solomon and Justin News has done an amazing job connecting these dots and the stories on their website. But the money goes from Soros to the PAC, from the PAC to Gardner, and then from Gardner into prosecuting these cases.
So, she fought for years to not turn this over. She then delayed for another 6 months after you guys had won. Do you trust that you have everything?
I still think that there are some communications out there probably to be had. Some communications dealing with why, right? The why behind this and who ultimately concocted this entire idea. But what I think is important for the public to know, and what, you know, John was really trying to get out there, was the fact that this happens, right? Mm-hmm. People don't realize that their local DAs, who they vote in, are politically inclined to bring charges against certain people. They just don't realize that, and they trust the system. Unfortunately, we have to question this, and we need to be very aware of who we're electing to these local prosecuting positions.
So Jeff Smith looks like he was pretty intimately involved in this right from the get-go. He was the one that lost his sweetheart government contract for low-income housing, and it looks like he aided the case early on. Did you see anything that would really point towards him as being the origin of all of this?
You know, the documents kind of speak for themselves in his involvement. I don't want to make any leaps and any assumptions sure. from those documents, but they certainly do show and support that he was involved. Mm. You know, there was a lot of players in this, whether we're talking about Jeff Smith or Scott Faughn, you know, possibly his attorneys that were involved here. We're talking about, you know, Philip Sneed's attorney, Watkins. And it really is, when you try to draw it on a whiteboard, it's like a web, right? And that's how these things typically play out, because one person is making a payment, hiding something from another, having a communication with another, somebody with a name who you don't know her real identity. And it just reeks. It just reeks of like what sure. we saw in Russiagate.
Sure.
And what we've seen at a federal level also.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, we do need to take a break. I want to talk to you a little bit more about those payments. We are talking about prosecutorial misconduct today with Kimberly Herman. She is the general counsel for Southeastern Legal Foundation. You can find out more about them at slfliberty.org. What now and what next? That's next. And welcome back. We're talking with Kimberly Herman. She is the general counsel for Southeastern Legal Foundation. You can find out more about them at slfliberty.org. That's slfliberty.org. And we'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com. And Kim, just real quick about Southeastern Legal Foundation. You guys take cases from all across the states. How do people get a hold of you if they think that they have a case that you might be interested in? And what types of cases do you handle?
Yeah, absolutely. They can find us on our website, which is slfliberty.org. Or on Twitter, our handle is SLF Liberty. And we litigate in a lot of different areas. So we have been doing a lot of work to save America's schools, specifically trying to stop our schools from requiring segregation, which when I say, I typically get crazy looks, but we do have public schools out there that are actually segregating right. students. We do a lot of free speech work. So we work with a lot of college campuses, a lot of college students to expand free speech on their college campuses. And then, you know, a lot of work to rein in our administrative state. We have a federal government that's gone wild and gone rogue. And when Obama said he had a pen and a phone, you know, Biden does too. And so we have to do a lot of work to rein in the administrative state and keep them in their constitutional lane.
Absolutely. So getting back to these payments, this is really suspicious. You've got the lawyer for the ex-husband of the hairdresser got a $50,000 payment from Scott Faughn, the publisher of the Missouri Times, and then the next day received another $50,000 from some mysterious person by the name of Skylar. So in total, it's $100,000. And you know, I know technically it's not a bribe, but he's essentially paying for the lawyers being paid to effectively bring a case to Kim Gardner. So it sounds so dubious. Is there some crime somewhere in there?
Well, if we had a local DA who actually cared about stopping crime, then maybe they would look into it. You know, there have been, not with respect to the money exchange, but there have been some indictments, with respect to this entire investigation dealing with some, a former FBI informant who right. was involved, and people who knew that these pictures just flat out didn't exist. And there have been some ethical charges brought against Kim Gardner, and that have been not prosecuted, but they've been founded. But again, they're just getting slaps on their hand. And so, you know, it would be wonderful if we had attorneys who actually were looking into things like this, where the real crimes are actually occurring. But, you know, unfortunately, we don't. And the concern is that this is happening in other places, too.
Yeah.
Right. There have been stories about Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, California. I believe Heritage Foundation is going to be coming out with a report on these local prosecutors who have gone rogue or who are being paid to bring political cases. And so, you know, everyone really should look out for that from Heritage Foundation.
Well, yeah, we'll have to certainly look into that ourselves here. So you said in a Just the News article, quote, it is unconscionable that a prosecuting attorney who is responsible for knowing the law and applying it fairly and properly would so blatantly disregard and disobey it. As Mr. Solomon's lawsuit proves, the truth will always come out. And you're right, this is absolutely unconscionable. But isn't that really the problem? We've got people like Kim Gardner who clearly have no consciences, no ethics, no moral standing, and yet they're in a position of authority. So without morals to guide her, there are no breaks for people like her. There's nothing stopping them from going after people they know are innocent. I mean, as you said earlier, we saw this with the Russia collusion thing. We saw it with Trump. You had agents and administrators there within the FBI and Department of Justice who were willing to put people in jail whom they knew were innocent. And that's the thing that I always find so galling about that whole situation is they're prosecuting people they knew were innocent all because they're trying to go after Trump and to cover up their own crimes in the pursuit of a political opponent. So obviously we need to expose and get these people out of office, but they have to be punished on some level, really and truly punished, not some sort of slap on the wrist. How do we do that, though? Is it a matter of tougher laws or more internal investigators? What are your thoughts on that?
We need changes at the top, right? We need changes in overall top-down leadership, whether it's, you know, in Washington from the White House and getting the right people into these agencies who are willing to actually clean house and make sure that, you know, our FBI attorneys and our DOJ attorneys are actually following the law. You know, we need to be able to hold these attorneys accountable. When Bill Clinton lied under oath, you know, SLF stepped in and we brought a lawsuit that actually ended up getting him disbarred. Mm. We need to, you know, think about, is that something that we need to do? Do we need to clean house in the legal profession? You know, we're a self-regulated profession. Let's start self-regulating.
Well, that would be awesome. How do you do that, though, in terms of the self-regulation portion of things? Could you look at something like three strikes and you're out? I mean, we do that for criminals. Why not do that for prosecutors or even these judges?
Yeah, I mean, we need some reforms when it comes to bar complaints and how our ethical rules as attorneys are being followed. The left has done a tremendous job with making it very challenging to bring these types of complaints. You know, we've looked into that, and the left is also very smart. And the minute that they believe that a bar complaint or that an ethical complaint is going to be filed against them, they will say, I don't need my license anymore. I can go make money being a lobbyist. Hmm. Or look at our presidents. As soon as an attorney becomes a president, they drop their law license since we took Bill Clinton's bar license. So they're smart, but we need to be smarter.
Yeah, absolutely. So the irony here is that you've got a prosecutor who just makes up evidence to go after a duly elected governor. He's forced to step down based on his false allegation, but she makes the false allegation and nothing. She's still there. So I would really, is there any chance going forward that she'll face any kind of retribution for this case, or is it going to take something else?
I mean, I think it would take something else. And, you know, maybe maybe the Missouri Attorney General has the power to do something here, right? We'll see. Missouri, the current Attorney General was just elected to Senate. Mm-hmm. So maybe when we have, you know, a new Attorney General stepping in there, maybe they'll take a look at this. I don't know if he has the power to do anything, but, you know, if he or she does, I would hope that they do.
Yeah, well, that would be absolutely awesome. Kimberly Herman, she is the general counsel for Southeastern Legal Foundation. Their website, one more time, slfliberty.org. And of course, we'll link that up on ispyradio.com as well. Kim, thanks so much for your time today.
Absolutely.
And welcome back. I'd like to welcome Mark Thielman back to the show. We knew we'd want to discuss election results today, and we knew Mark would be a good one to talk to, having been a candidate for Oregon's governor, and he's now working with election integrity groups. Mark, it's great to talk to you.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so first one to the mic always, or at least often, sets the narrative, and Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan, the rhinos of the party, rushed to the mic, in fact, the very election night, and said we didn't get the red tsunami that we had all expected because of Trump. It's all Trump's fault. So do you have any comments on that?
Well, there's kind of a civil war in a sense. Mm-hmm. I know that's a canceled term, but so we have the Mike Pence crowd, which is what McConnell and Ryan and some of these others are right. Kind of members of, and it's a real because they want to blame Trump. You know, these weren't good candidates, or their quality of candidates, et cetera, et cetera. The reality is that a lot of the Trump candidates did not get the financial support from the Republican Party, especially towards the end there.
Right.
And that's the piece that, you know, I really wish that our politicians would tell the whole story, that we have a divided party on the presidential front coming up, and that, and it wormed its way into the red wave issue. So single-mindedness in politics is critical. You can't be having those divides if you're trying to create a red wave.
No. Well, and of course, it's always easy to criticize outcomes when time machines don't exist, because the reality is we don't know what things would have been like if they had run other candidates. And so it's easy to come out there and say, well, it's obviously Trump's fault. Well, if we had a time machine where we can go back and run the candidates that Paul Ryan and Mike Pence and Mitch McConnell would have liked to have run, chances are we probably would have lost double digits, because those rhino candidates, those so-called moderates who are really just Democrat lights, they don't get the votes out. We saw that with Mitt Romney himself there back in 2012, and we've seen it with all of these other candidates. And so for them to say that it must be Trump's fault, well, yeah, you can say that, but unfortunately there's no means to test that.
And for them to claim that they know that the exact opposite would have happened if Trump hadn't been involved, that's just a complete logical fallacy.
Well, and I think, you know, I really appreciate the way you frame that, because, you know, if you dive deeper and you look at the talking points that all of the candidates, the Mitch McConnell candidates and the Trump-backed candidates were using, all of the winning talking points were clearly conservative, non-rhino issues. And I think that that's a critical piece, because, you know, you get the genuine message gets lost in the politics. And that's unfortunate, because it's a grassroots populist message that Trump kind of fomented that still pervades and is dominant today. Mm-hmm. So we do want to thank Donald Trump for that.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, regarding the red wave that wasn't, it looks to me, when you look in areas where there were rhinos, or perceived ones at least, that didn't do well, Oz is champion among that. There was a lot of people that were not happy that Trump had picked that candidate. And yes, that was Trump's pick. But at the same time, he's the type of candidate that I would have thought that the moderates in the Republican wing, the Mitch McConnells of the world, would have swooped in and tried to support, and yet they didn't. Mm-hmm. So, you know, perhaps, you know, that's why Mitch and the others are all complaining. It's because they're trying to get ahead of things to make it look like it's Trump's fault, when it's really the rhino and weaker conservative candidates that continue to be the problem.
Yeah, and then the final piece, too, when you talk to some of these guys, is they have a belief that anything associated with Trump brings out the left to vote. So, you know, that's the other piece that they're not necessarily saying. And my point is, it may bring out the left to vote, but it also brings out the conservatives to vote. Mm-hmm. You see, we don't have the good data on that, but, you know, we had a record number of Republicans vote in this national election we just had. And I think Donald Trump gets some credit for that.
I think so as well. And in fact, you bring up a good point there, because just today, that we're talking to you Friday morning, just the news had an article out that it looks like the Republicans on a national level may have won the popular vote. There was 52.3% of the total ballots cast were for Republican candidates versus only 46.2. I mean, that's 6.1% difference. That's pretty big. And so and so for them to say that, oh, well, there wasn't a red wave, well, that looks to me like there was a pretty good red wave, especially when you look at places like New York, of all places. I mean, this is another deep blue state. You had one pickup two pickups on Long Island. So the entirety of the Long Island now is all red. And then you had a pickup in the Hudson Valley. And this was against the DCC chairman. This is the guy that controls the funds going to Democrats, and he lost his own race to a Republican. So there were elements of a very strong red wave, just not in all of the races we would have liked. And I think that was the other big part of the problem, looking back at things, is there was so much hype that there was going to be this massive red wave. And I think we just got kind of destroyed by our own over expectations and everything.
Well, we did. And, you know, the Democrats are good at motivating. There was an uptick in younger voters in Pennsylvania in particular. The other thing, too, I think that hurt our cause there is that over half of the voters had voted before the Fetterman-Oz debate.
Yes.
And this is an example of why we really shouldn't be pushing early voting three weeks or a yes. month before the election, because, you know, if it's really about vetting candidates and giving the people the information they need to make the decisions that that are valuable, so that they don't end up watching a debate saying, "I wish I had my ballot back." And that was a big issue in mm-hmm. Pennsylvania. So the Democrats are real skilled. They've set up rules. They used COVID to create looser, you know, more amenable rules to their way of doing business. And we really need to begin to roll some of this back and try to have a national conversation about, you know, how early should early voting be. Otherwise, we're undermining the value of the process.
Well, and of course, here in Oregon and in other places, it's not just early voting, it's late voting as well, because Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. you know, that was the other thing that was really galling to me. And when I heard that they were going to do it, that's what really made me concerned that we're going to start seeing the cheat roll in and in places, especially like Pennsylvania, because they openly defied the Supreme Court that had said, no, you yep. can't count those ballots that come in with either bad postmarks or ones that are late. Yeah, you can't count those. And they and then a week or two after that, they said, you know what, we're going to do it anyway. So that's pretty strong commitment to cheating if you're willing to defy the highest court in the land. Let's go ahead and take a break there. Mark Thielman is involved in some election integrity issues, and we're going to pick his brain on that. Everyone stay with us. Welcome back. We're talking to Mark Thielman. He's a former superintendent of the LC School District. I saw a 500% increase in enrollment there under his watch. He's also a political advocate, education consultant, and activist. And he's also the chief petitioner for the Real School Choice, the election. And he's also, as I said, going out of that break, he's involved with an election integrity project here in Oregon. And Mark, I'm just looking at everything you're doing. I mean, do you have any time to breathe anymore?
No, it's pretty much, it starts when I wake up and it stops when I put the phone down. So,
well, one of the things that we saw in several races, in fact, there was a judge that just ordered on Thursday that they were going to crack open one of these voting machines because of voting irregularities. And we also saw reports on election night that some of these machines were being hacked into, which is really weird because I thought these machines couldn't connect to the internet. That's what we've been told for the last 2 years. So what's going on there?
Well, the reality is the machines can be hacked into, and they do have modems. And several of them for this election were updated to have modems installed, some of the older versions that certain counties across the country were using. So I think the fix is in terms of whether or not they can be hacked into. Obviously, in Oregon, our own attorney general, you know, put out a public statement that these machines are susceptible to hacking, even if they're not being used online or plugged in online. So I think it's good information to share with people that there's modems in these things and they can be accessed. I mean, that is a fact. And I think we're far enough down the rabbit hole to say that.
Yes, I think that's clear. Looking at these machines, because that, of course, was the whole point of using these machines, is it was supposed to speed up the counting process. Yet here mm-hmm. we are. Arizona is now saying that they need into next week to finish things. How is that possible when these machines are supposed to speed things up? Why is it slowing things down instead?
Well, you know, what it creates is, and that's the purpose of the election integrity lawsuit that, I'm kind of leading, because what it's creating in the minds of people is it's creating conspiracy theorists. It's causing people, and, you know, I was inundated yesterday with feedback from people. It causes people who normally would never consider anything untoward going on to say, hey, wait a minute, what do you mean? Now you need till next week. You know, especially folks who are a little bit older, 40 or over, most of their life, they've had election results that have been fairly accurate on election night. Look at Florida. They cranked it out rather quickly. Mm-hmm. And so what people need to understand is that, yeah, this is that Arizona is taking its time because it can, because it's been allowed to create rules that allow it to slow the process down. And then that causes people to say, well, why would they want to slow the process down? You know, I mean, I thought it was supposed to be speeding up. You ever notice that? We're using the machines to make it faster, and now we need 2 weeks to count the ballot.
Yeah.
So that causes a rational thinking person to say, well, maybe there's some other reason. Maybe something's untoward, or maybe they're cheating. And so this is the government, people in the position of government, creating this uncertainty among the electorate, and that is anathema or anathema to their duty. They have a duty to count votes quickly, to give people results quickly, so that people don't go to those other places in their mind.
Mm. Well, the reality is the biggest threat to democracy is untrustworthy elections, because you will never trust a government if you can't trust how they are elected. And I think people are right to be suspicious of these machines, especially when you look at what's happening in Arizona versus what's happening in Florida. Florida was able to get their count done that night. That's how it used to be going back, you know, decades, is we would always know on election night the results of these elections. And yet Arizona, which uses all sorts of these machines to count the ballots, they are slow walking things. As I said earlier, they're now projecting they're going to need until next week to figure things out. That doesn't make any sense to the normal person.
Well, it doesn't make sense. And then the reality is that obviously they have a motivation to slow the vote down. And the most obvious fill in the blank is, you know, they're using it to calculate how many votes they need to have their candidates win. And this is, I mean, it's shameful that we're in this situation, you see. But that's where we're at right now. And we're going to have to either get good at using these new rules like in Arizona that work for conservatives, or we're going to have to change the rules and bring maybe hopefully a more Florida-style model to those states.
Yeah, it's my understanding that in Florida, they banned mass mail-in ballots. They banned ballot harvesting. They require voter ID, and DeSantis even created an election police force.
Yeah.
That seems to be the way to go. And you know, now you can look at that and you say, yeah, I can trust that election because of those steps that were put in place to stop cheating. And I think that's the thing. That's the thing I think that is so missing in places. You know, even here in Oregon, we have not created a system that people can fully trust because there are so many potentials for exploitation.
Yeah, and you get Chamia Fagan here in Oregon. You know, she's done her public service announcements out. My favorite was she said, Oregon has the gold standard of mail-in voting. And then, great. According to who?
Yeah.
No filling, no details. And then she said, you know, it's totally secure, and you can track your ballot at every stage. So I thought, oh boy, I'll go ahead and do that. Did you know that my ballot was received on November 8th? And I have no idea if it was counted or not. But she says if once we say we receive it, it's counted. That's not true.
Yeah, we know that's not true. I checked myself, and mine doesn't even show up. And I voted on Election Day.
That's nice.
It doesn't show any record of it being received or that it was counted. So, yeah.
Well, this is the new way. You know, the... everybody holding their ballot, or a large proportion of people holding their ballot to Election Day, would mess up any pre-programmed algorithm if one exists.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the ways you get around that is you just undercount certain party votes. In other words, you say, yeah, your ballot was received, and then you don't count them.
Mm.
And it causes a lot of people to wonder. So you're an example of a lot of the calls I've been getting. Voted. They have no record of your ballot.
I know that Chuck Weiss is very suspicious of that, is that they're undercounting or even not counting Republican votes. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break. We'll wrap things up with Mark Thielman after this. And we're back in our final segment now on the iSpire Radio Show. We're talking to Mark Thielman. He's the former superintendent for the Alsea School District. He is an education consultant and activist and chief petitioner for Real School Choice. And he's also involved in a lot of election integrity efforts. You can get involved in that yourself by going to battlegroundoregon.org. That's battlegroundoregon.org. We'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com as well. And so, Mark, as far as election integrity is concerned, and I know that we're going to have another show on this, or probably a couple shows, on this down the road when the smoke is cleared and we finally have some result. It just seems to me that one of the biggest opportunities for fraud is this endless end date that we have, where it used to be you had to have it in to the elections office on election day. The postmark didn't matter. It had to arrive at the elections office on or before election day. They've now changed that. We have up to a week now to gather some of these other ones. It seems to me that's the biggest opportunity for fraud is if you don't have a defined date, then you slam that door shut, all ballots are in. It's like at the casino. You can't keep betting while the dice are being rolled, or as the ball is slowing on the roulette wheel. You've got to have all ballots in, and until you have that gate that stops them, it just seems like that's an open door for fraud.
Yeah, and it is. I mean, that's the reality. The rules were set up again to advantage Democrats in this sense. And people need to, I like to repeat that because people need to understand the why of it. It doesn't make sense. Remember, ballot counting machines were supposed to speed up counting. Mm-hmm. Now we're 3 weeks or 2 weeks to count. So if it doesn't make sense, then it's politics. And what kind of politics should we apply here? Obviously, one side is trying to advantage itself over the other. And we've seen that in multiple states. You notice that all the delayed votes are in battleground states.
Yeah.
I thought that was a strange coincidence.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't say that's a coincidence at all. I think it's rather telling is what that is.
And that's my point. Yeah.
Yeah. So in the time that we have left, I know that we didn't get the massive turnover that we would have liked there at the federal level, but it's looking at, and again, we're talking to you Friday morning, it's looking very strong that Republicans will likely gain control of the House and possibly the Senate, although that may go back to a 50-50 split. We've got a couple of runoffs yet to be done, but assuming that goes forward, assuming that Republicans have both control of the House and the Senate, what are some priorities that you'd like to see them focus on?
Well, obviously, addressing the oil and energy policy should be number one. And number two, they should be opening up investigations into a whole host of things, including the vote counting debacles in Arizona, Nebraska, Pennsylvania. The federal government isn't in direct control of state elections, but they certainly can wield and inquire. And I think it's really critical that they do that. Being a firewall against this radical climate change, agenda is another thing I think that's important. But again, the investigation, I think, is the best tool they have. And they need to look into all of these things, especially the Jan 6th nightmare. That the country clearly doesn't like, but yet the media continues to push.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you on both of those levels. As far as the green agenda and global warming, I think actually that should probably be one of their top priorities because they need to start defunding their opposition by divesting them of public funding. And that's where so much of global warming and green energy, whether it's through tax credits or direct funds through loans or through, in most cases, it's grants to some of these organizations that get out there and do nothing but promote global warming. And the thing with that is by the time the elections come around, they've now got trained activists who know about promoting issues and everything else. And so that's why these Democrats continue to win in some of these races, because they've got people that have been paid for the last 2 years, thanks to the U.S. taxpayer, to promote their issues. And so, of course, these issues then come to the forefront, but they've got to start divesting them. Stop feeding your opposition, taxpayer dollars, I think, is a big priority there.
Yeah. Well, no, I couldn't agree more. It's become almost like a religion, and it's a government-funded one.
Yeah. Well, and right now, it was just announced earlier in the week that the UN wants so-called rich countries to pay $2 trillion per year in global warming tribute. It's just absurd. As far as the investigations are concerned, I do think they need to proceed somewhat carefully on that, because we don't want to take on the robe and the mantle of the Democrats, which was to use the government to go after your political opposition. And so I think there needs to be some caution as they go forward with that. And I think one of the ways that they can do that is is to focus on not just investigating Democrats, but also Republicans. They need to open the doors all to everybody investigating and really focus on getting the corruption out of government. I think that's to be the main focus. Unfortunately, a lot of it is caused by Democrats, so they will be swept up in that. But you've got to focus on the corruption regardless of party, I think.
Well, I would, yeah, that would be awesome to look forward to. I'm not sure they'll be able to do that with narrow margins, you know. Yeah. But really, if government was working in a healthy way, it would be exactly as you just described, that, you know, there would be a group of us that believe in duty and believe in following the law and believe in the integrity of the system. And then all of those who don't, you know, are out for some kind of personal gain, kind of the Hunter Biden motif.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, we're not in that time.
Yeah, it really is too bad, because corruption and election integrity and these types of issues, these are things that everybody on both sides of the aisle ought to be focused on. Unfortunately, we're just not there yet. Mark, we only got about a minute here with you. As far as Oregon is concerned, it looks like we broke the supermajority in the Senate. It looks like we're picking up some seats there in the House. Unfortunately, there's still not a lot of results yet. But do you have any thoughts about what Oregon may look like in the near future?
Well, the breaking of the supermajority is really critical.
Yes.
So that's a result of the red wave, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's some other more subtle wins. The minority members of the minority communities voting for Christine Drazen have increased dramatically. So mm-hmm. that is a real inroad. It shows that the Republican Party is becoming a multicultural, diverse party and becoming the party of the working person. So I think in the long run, we've made tremendous progress, and we really need to celebrate some of that. And in spite of maybe not getting the result we were hoping for, you know, on all fronts.
Yeah, yeah. Well, unfortunately, we are up against the clock, Mark. I want to thank you so much for your time today.
You bet. Thanks.
Results are still coming in. Things are looking positive, so keep your hopes up. And don't let the Mitch McConnells, the Paul Ryans, and the other never-Trumpers get you down using their logical fallacy to claim they know with certainty what would have happened if they'd been in charge and ran their candidates. What we can definitely say is that once again, they and the other Rhinos proved they are poor teammates. Imagine winning the Super Bowl by 2 points, but a third of your team goes to the mic to immediately rip on the quarterback because they didn't win by 30 points. If that's how they respond by immediately pointing the finger, if that's the measure of their teamwork, how hard were they really trying? It's about them. It's not about the team. It's about them getting the starting quarterback position. Don't fall for it. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.